As Janet mentioned, the Bible reading will be found in Joshua chapter 6. I'm reading from the King James Version. It's Joshua 6, verses 15 through verse 19. And it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawning of the day and compassed the city after the same manner seven times. Only on that day they compassed the city seven times. And it came to pass at the seventh time when the priests blew with the trumpets, Joshua said unto the people, Shout, for the Lord hath given you the city, and the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in her house, because she hath hid the messengers that we sent. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. Now, Brother Norton.
If you'd like to leave a marker right there, you may want to turn over to chapter 7, and you can leave a marker right there at Joshua chapter 7, because that is actually where our story is going to take place today for our next lesson there in Joshua chapter 7. Thank you so much for the reading. Thank you for the songs, Donald. The Dare to Stand Like Joshua was perfect. Sets us up for exactly what we're going to be talking about. So, as promised earlier, the lesson that we're going to be talking about today should feed right off of where we left off with our first lesson this morning. So, by way of reminder, what we finished talking about was the children of Israel were leaving the wilderness of Sinai. They were headed towards the promised land, but when they got there, they didn't have enough faith and trust in God to be able to enter into the land. And so they rebelled, they refused. God punished that generation and sent them back into the wilderness for 40 years. And after 40 years, once that older generation died, the next generation, their children, were now ready to enter into the promised land. And that's where our story picks up. You may have recognized those instructions that we just read through. You may recognize that as being the conquest of the city of Jericho. That was their first stop. The children of Israel had just crossed over the River Jordan, and the first place they were going as God took them into the land was the city of Jericho. Jericho's victory was absolutely amazing. And it was just exactly along the same theme as everything else that God had been doing for them. It was a massive victory that in no way could they have done on their own. They got to the city of Jericho, and you remember the very peculiar instructions that God gave them. All they had to do was get to the city and march around it the right way, the right number of times, on the right days, and at the end of it, they blew their trumpets and they shouted with a mighty shout, and the walls came tumbling down. We sing that song sometimes too, right? And that's exactly what happened. And God granted them an amazing victory at the city of Jericho because they followed his instructions exactly. Well, almost. You see, when they got to the city of Jericho, there was a man named Achan amongst the people that went to Jericho. And what I want to discover or explore with you this morning is the idea of the problem with Achan. And what I want to show you throughout our lesson this morning is that the problem with Achan is, well, it's the problem with me too. So let's study that. If you've got your Bibles there in Joshua chapter 7, let's just see what happened. Because you can imagine what's going on in the mind of the Israelites that are there. Think about what God has just done for you. He's caused the Jordan River to stop so that you can cross over it. He's given you the city of Ai, which you have no means or right to be able to conquer on your own, but God gave it to you. And so he knows, you know, God has given you the promised land, so it's our job to go in and take the promised land. So fresh off the heels of conquering the city of Jericho, they set their eyes on their next prize, or their next city, which was a much, much smaller city called Ai. You might even call it a town. I don't even know if it was a city, but it was much, much smaller. So if you're there in Joshua chapter 7, let's look at verse 2. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, "Go up and spy out the land." So the men went up and spied out Ai. They returned to Joshua and said to him, "Do not let all the people go up. Only about 2,000 or 3,000 men need to go up to Ai. Do not make all the people toil up there, for they are few." Verse 4. So about 3,000 men from the people went up there, but they fled from the men of Ai. Oh, wait a minute. What just happened here? God was with them. They achieved a mighty victory. They see their next city, which is so small that there's no reason to trouble the entire army. Just send a few thousand people over there, and that will be sufficient to take care of Ai. So they send a few thousand people there, but instead of happening, or what happened at Jericho happening again, those 3,000 Israelites, they're turned away. They're defeated, and they flee the city of Ai. Why? What happened there? Well, let's keep reading. Verse 6, "Then Joshua tore his clothes and fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. Joshua said, 'Alas, O Lord God, why did you ever bring this people over the Jordan only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say, since Israel has turned their back before the enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off your name from the earth. And what will you do for your great name?'" Do you see the despair, or do you hear the despair in Joshua's voice? "O Lord, this is embarrassing. What has happened to us? Everyone's going to hear about this. They're going to surround us. They're going to destroy us. They're going to cut off your name from the earth. What is going on?" Well, God has an answer for that. Verse 10, "So the Lord answered Joshua and said, 'Rise up. Why is it that you have fallen on your face? Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them, and they have even taken some of the things under the ban and have both stolen and deceived. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things. Therefore, the sons of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies, for they have become accursed. I will not be with you anymore unless you destroy the things under the ban from your midst.'" Do you remember our scripture reading from just a few minutes ago? What were the very specific instructions that they had been given once they made it into Jericho? Don't touch certain things. The gold, the silver, all these valuable things, those are to be dedicated to the Lord. You don't take them, you don't touch them. But guess what happened? Exactly that. God warned them not to do that, and he warned them of consequences. He said, if you touch these things, if you take them, you will be accursed, and I will not be with you. Well, what happened when Israel went to Ai? God was not with them, and they were defeated. So, through God's help, Joshua is able to determine exactly who caused this horrible thing to happen. Are you still there in Joshua 7? Look at verse 16. "So Joshua arose early in the morning and brought Israel nearby tribes, and the tribe of Judah was taken. He brought the family of Judah," and he goes on and on. Let's skip down to about verse 19, because God is able to help him to select the man Achan. Verse 19, "Then Joshua said to Achan, 'My son, I implore you, give glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, and give praise to him, and tell me now what you have done. Do not hide it from me.' So Achan answered Joshua and said, 'Truly, I have sinned against the Lord, the God of Israel, and this is what I did. when I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar and 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold 50 shekels in weight, then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath it. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran to the tent, and behold, it was concealed in his tent with the silver underneath it. They took them from inside the tent and brought them to Joshua and to all the sons of Israel, and they poured them out before the Lord. Then Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, the silver, the mantle, the bar of gold, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkey, his sheep, his tent, and all that belonged to him, and they brought them up to the valley of Achor. Joshua said, "Why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day." And all Israel stoned them with stones, and they burned them with fire after they have stoned them with stones, and they raised a great heap of stones that stands to this day. And the Lord turned from his fierceness of his anger. Therefore, the name of that place has been called the Valley of Achor to this day. This is a very serious thing that we just read about. It's a very traumatic thing, but very, very serious. God had given them a very specific set of instructions. And for the most part, the nation of Israel followed those instructions. But when they got into Jericho, Achan was tempted. Achan took something that he shouldn't have taken. He hid it and tried to deceive everybody. But God knew about it. What I want us to see this morning is that there is a very, very particular pattern here. And it's a pattern that we see repeating over and over again. And it starts with God giving a command, God giving instructions. And in this case, it was do not touch. And then after that, we see it. We see the thing that we're not supposed to have, and we become tempted by it. Achan saw the silver, he saw the gold, and he was tempted. And then we do something odd. We calculate the risk of getting away with taking that thing that we're not supposed to have. I want to take it, I want to hide it, and I calculate exactly how much risk that's going to be and how much trouble I might get in if I get caught. We think about this. But the problem with that is you can't get away from it. You can't get away with it because God already knows. In this case, before they ever went to Ai, God was no longer with them. God knew that there was sin in the camp, and so he did not support them. He was not with them, and that's why they were defeated. In the end, it results in death. And this is a pattern that we see over and over and over again. We see it all throughout the scriptures. So God gives a specific command, but we're tempted to do that thing anyway. We do it, we try to hide it, we try to cover it up, and God already knows. The result of that secret sin is death. We see it in the scriptures, but also this pattern plays out in you and in me as well, time and time again. So there's some lessons that we need to learn from this. We need to look at Achan, and we need to see exactly what he went through, and we need to learn some lessons from this. The first lesson that I would encourage you to understand here is that when times are good, we need to be especially careful or especially watchful. Think about Israel. Think about what they had just been through. This amazing victory. God had worked miracle after miracle after miracle, gave them an amazing victory. You can imagine the confidence that they felt. Our God is with us, and there's nothing we can't accomplish. Well, somebody in the group let their guard down a little bit. I mean, this is a recipe for success. If you obey God, you listen to him, you do what he says, he's with you. And when God is with you, there's nothing you can't accomplish. The problem was, after Achan, God wasn't with them anymore. We need to be careful when times are good. What happens to you and me when we feel unstoppable? Now, I can't speak for everybody, but at once upon a time, I was also a teenage boy, and I remember what it's like to have unending confidence, and I can do anything, and there's no stopping me. That's dangerous. You know, what usually happens is we get hurt. We try stupid things, and we wind up hurting ourselves, right? Well, that's what happens when we feel unstoppable, like there's nothing standing in my way and I can do whatever I want. That's a dangerous feeling. Because usually when we feel like we can do anything, we will try to do whatever we want. But we need to be careful. We cannot let our guard down when times are good. Go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Leave your marker there in Joshua 7. We'll come back. But if you'll go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in a chapter where the Apostle Paul is actually writing about all these mistakes that Israel made, and he's encouraging them to learn from their mistakes. You can look there in chapter 10, even go back to verse 6, and he'll say, "Now these things happened as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved." He's talking about the mistakes that Israel made during this period that we've been discussing this morning. Verse 11, "Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the end of ages has come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall." That's a verse we use often, and even if we don't use it as a Bible verse, we use it out of context all the time. "Let he who stands take heed lest he falls." You know, it's maybe not until you start studying through this that you realize that Paul is actually talking about Israel here when he says these things. Because guess what happened to them? They were feeling confident. They thought God was with them. But they forgot to be on watch when times are good. We need to take heed and we need to pay attention. And there's a very good reason for that. Do you remember what Peter wrote about the devil in 1 Peter chapter 5? I'll turn back there and read it very quickly for you. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." Pay attention. He says, be sober in spirit. Do you know what that means? He's not necessarily talking about alcohol there. He's talking about being awake and being alert, being aware of what's going on around you, because sin is always on the prowl for you. And so as Achan marched into Jericho, maybe he let his guard down a little bit too much because sin was there waiting for him. And when we let our guard down, those things can take over. Go back with me to Luke chapter 12. We need to talk about treasure for just a moment. Luke chapter 12, verses starting in verse 16. "And he told them a parable. The land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Pause for a moment. Do you see what's happening there to this man? Times are good. No, times are great. He's got such a harvest, he doesn't even have room for all the harvest he has. So the best solution he's got is, I just need bigger barns. I've got so much stuff. And he's praising himself. He's complimenting himself on all this great amount of goods that he's got. But look what God says to him. Verse 20. "But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now, who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" This is a parable that Jesus taught. And it's a cautionary tale. And there are lots of different lessons that we can take from this, but within our context today, we need to pay attention when times are good. When things are going our way, there might be a reason for that. And it might be that God is taking care of you, and that we need to remember to give credit where credit is due. And that is something that this man forgot. That's something that Achan forgot. And for a moment, he sees something that he wants and he takes it. So the question we need to ask ourselves is, where's our treasure? 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, and both Hebrews 4, which we may have read both of these earlier today, encourage us to be diligent. That word diligent is an active word. It's the opposite of being passive. In other words, when times are good, when things are going our way, that's when we need to be on guard and be actively reminding ourselves that there's a reason things are going so well, instead of passively sitting back and just hoping that good things continue to happen to you. We need to remind ourselves to be diligent, actively pursue those things. I'm going to go to Colossians chapter 3. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Paul writes to the church at Colossae and he says, "Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on the earth. For you have died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory." These also are active words. Seeking and setting your mind on things that are above require an active pursuit of your goal. Not a passive one, but an active pursuit. One more. Go back to 1 Corinthians with me in chapter 9. Paul here, writing to the church at Corinth once again, he says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way as not without aim. I box in such a way as not beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified." Do you see the words and the language that he's using here? This is metaphorical speak here, and he's making the metaphor here is games, physical activity, running, boxing, racing. What does it take to do those things? Can I passively win a race if I just get out there and just start going and hope everything will be okay? No, I have to train and I have to work towards these things. And that's what he's encouraging us here, is you've got to run. You have to actively pursue those things. I want you to think about something here. I put a question on the screen. Why do you think there are so many verses throughout our Bibles that encourage us to be more focused, to be more diligent, to keep our eyes on the prize, keep pursuing those things, and to finish the race? All these things that require diligence. Why do you think there are so many reminders? It's because we need those things. It's because we need the constant reminder to keep pushing forward. When times are good, don't let your guard down. Keep pushing forward. I'm going to go back to, Joshua chapter 7. The second lesson I would impart to you is that when there is risk, when it comes to sin, any amount of risk in regards to sin is too much risk. Let me say that again. When it comes to sin, any amount of risk is just too much. Think about what Achan did when he went into Jericho. And I want you to think of what he had to go through to get that gold and silver where he put it. Do you remember how many people, well, this was before the wandering in the wilderness period, but when Moses was leading, there were 600,000 men, 600,000 soldiers. I'm sure whoever marched into Jericho was probably pretty similar, if not more. But that many soldiers of Israel marched into Jericho. We'll assume at least 600,000. Achan's one man. He sees the gold. What does he have to do first? Well, he has to hide it from everybody else in the army, right? He has to hide it from all of his other fellow soldiers who are not doing what he's doing. So he takes the gold, the silver, the mantle, and he hides it. What does he have to do next? He has to get it back out of Jericho, past the army. And then what does he have to do next? He has to get it back to his tent. What's next? Then he has to get it into his tent, dig a hole, and bury it without anybody else knowing about it. How many steps did Achan have to take along the way to hide this gold and silver? It was a lot. Do you think he calculated that risk? How am I going to get this out? What am I going to do with it? Where am I going to put it? Yeah, of course he did. Is anybody going to see me taking this? Can I get away with it? Yeah, I can. All I got to do is bury it in my tent. He calculated the risk and got it all, somehow managed to get all those treasures back to his tent and bury them. So let me ask you a question. What happens to you and me when we are faced with our own Jericho situation? What happens when we see something that we're not supposed to have, or we encounter something you're not supposed to touch, you're not supposed to have, you're not supposed to do, say, or whatever it is? What do we do? Well, fortunately, our Bible is absolutely full of examples of people who did exactly that. Remember, I told you, this is a pattern. This pattern of sin repeats itself over and over again, and I just listed a few. Adam and Eve, what were they not supposed to do? Don't touch the fruit of that tree. What did they do? Exactly that. David and Bathsheba, what did David do? He saw something that he wasn't supposed to have. What did he do? He took something he wasn't supposed to have and then tried to cover it up, tried to hide it. Solomon, throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon freely admits all of the things that he did and tried and realized at the end of it all, it was just vain. All of this was vanity. What about Judas? He saw some money, and he wanted that money, and so he was willing to give up the Son of God for that. What happens to you and me? Do we think that we're any better than that? No. We are subject to the same temptations that they are. When we see something that we're not supposed to have and the temptation pops into our head, what do we start doing? Can I get away with that? Who's going to know? Who's going to get hurt? Is anybody going to get hurt? Can I get away with it without anybody else finding out? These are thoughts that go through our head as we encounter situations like this. Hebrews chapter 12, this is a verse I need to read because there's a word here that I think accurately describes the nature of sin when we encounter it like this. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 reads, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." Hebrews chapter 12 is talking about the list of people from Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 is the hall of fame of faith. All these people who were humans just like us, who faced temptations just like us. Some of them fell to them, some of them overcame them. But the point is, we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses just like us, just like them. So we need to be running our race with endurance, because guess what sin can do to us? Ensnares. Entangles. Those are words that I think are extremely accurate when it comes to the nature of sin. It's like falling into a briar patch. What happens? You get tangled up and the things are wrapped all around you and it's hard to get back out. Guess what sin does to you? It tangles you up and wraps you up and it's hard to get back out of them. But we've got to be careful when it comes to these things. When it comes to sin and we start thinking about whether or not we can get away with these things, that's when you need to stop, because the answer 100% of the time is no. Because God already knows. You cannot hide it. But these are the questions we ask ourselves. Can I get away with it? Who's going to find out? Is anyone going to get hurt? And how long can I maybe get away with this? These are the questions that we ask ourselves. The idea of sin being secret is a lie. Now, it's true. You may have some sin in your life. I may have sin in my life that nobody else knows about on earth. But guess who will always know about it? Who knew about Achan's sin? God. And he's the only one who knew about it. The rest of them had to find out the hard way that there was sin in the camp. Go with me to Luke chapter 12. There is a phrase or an expression that Jesus repeats multiple times, and we see it in several of the Gospels here, but I'm going to go to Luke chapter 12, and I'm going to read verses 1 through 3. Under these circumstances, after so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were stepping on one another, he began saying to his disciples, first of all, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. There is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Accordingly, whatever you have said in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops." Jesus repeats this phrase. We see it in Matthew 10, Mark 4, Luke chapter 8. There's a reason this phrase or this idea is repeated so many times. It's just like the reminder to run and you need endurance. It's because we need this constant reminder that even though you think something might be secret, it is not. Consider Ananias and Sapphira from Acts chapter 5. Did anyone else know that they had kept back some of the money for themselves? No. But God did. We cannot hide these things from God. Go with me to Ephesians chapter 4. In Ephesians chapter 4, the Apostle Paul writes about speaking the truth in love. And I want to encourage you about something here. Ephesians chapter 4, starting in verse 14. "As a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by the craftiness and deceitful scheming, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ." Paul here is encouraging us to speak the truth in love. And within the context of his letter here, I think he's talking about the gospel and not being tossed around by different doctrines or different ideas. But the idea here, speak the truth in love, I think is something we can apply to every situation, especially when we have that inner talk. When we are speaking to ourselves, we need to be truthful to ourselves. Think about that. Do you realize it's possible to lie to yourself and convince yourself that this will be okay? What do you think Achan did? "I can take that gold. Nobody else is going to know." Do you know what he was doing? Lying to himself. And this is something that we can do too. So when we speak the truth in love to one another, let's also speak the truth in love to ourselves. Don't lie to yourself and pretend like you can get away with something that you can't, because God always knows. Be truthful to yourself. And don't convince yourself that you can get away with something that you absolutely cannot. When it comes to sin, the safest amount of risk is none. It's zero. The third and final lesson is that consequences can have repercussions that extend beyond just ourselves. Consequences can spread to other people. I want you to think about this. What happened after Achan left Jericho? We didn't read this back in Joshua 7, but when the army of Israel initially went to Ai, 36 of their number were killed. Now, I know that doesn't seem like a great number, but they knew that something was wrong. When they tried to invade and they couldn't conquer a small town. And 3,000 of their men were turned away, 36 were killed, and this small town, the soldiers from this small town, ran them out of town. They knew something was wrong. Let's keep going, though. Joshua chapter 7. God tells Israel that they were accursed, and He was not with them anymore because they had sinned, they had transgressed. Can you imagine what it would be like today if God all of a sudden decided that He was just no longer going to be with us and there was no path to victory for us? There was no path forward to heaven for us because, well, He's just no longer with us. That would be terrible. And remember that Israel at this time numbers at least in the millions. right? At least a million. And with the entire camp, God is no longer with them because of Achan. But there's more. Do you remember what the punishment was for Achan? Do you remember what not only he, but his entire family, his possessions, even down to the tent that he was living in? Do you remember what happened? Israel gathered them together, stoned them with stones, and burned them, and then buried it under a heap of stones. The consequences for his actions extended very far beyond just himself, until his entire family was purged from the nation of Israel. These are some major consequences of sin. And there's some lessons that we need to take away from this. Well, here's another lie we can tell ourselves, is that no one's going to get hurt if I do this. There's another lie. Because clearly, a lot of people did get hurt. We need to think about the fact that my sin can affect others. My sin does affect others. And I narrowed it down to two examples here. When it comes to sin, your home and your family can be absolutely devastated. I won't take the time to read through every one of these passages, but think about husbands and wives, the relationship that's supposed to exist between a husband and wife. Love, honor, respect, cherishing, all of these things are incompatible with secret sin. What about parents? Parents, you want to raise up your kids in the way that you're supposed to, and yet you harbor secret sin in your life. That doesn't work. Because the kids know. The kids can see you. The kids are like the canary in a coal mine. You know that expression? You want to see what a family is like on the inside? Look at the kids. Look at how their children behave. Because that's a good indication of what can go on inside of a house. You see children who are extremely disrespectful to their parents. I'm thinking of one little boy in particular that we know who is so disrespectful to his mother, it makes me wonder, what is going on in that house? Where did he learn that behavior? He didn't just invent it on his own. There's something going on inside the house, and you can see it in the kids. Sin, whether or not you think it's secret, will always find a way out. Sin can also be incompatible with your church family, too. You think about what can happen in your church if some of your members are harboring secret sins. In some of these passages, we talk about people who are coming, well, who are already within the church, who are like wolves in sheep's clothing, who arise from within the church, and all they do is pull people away. They create divisions. They create factions within the church because of sinful desires, because of greed, and all kinds of different things. The church can be hurt too. You know what sin does in a church? And it's unfortunate that I can tell you that I've seen these things firsthand within a church congregation. You know what secret sin does? It creates anger. It creates confusion and frustration. It creates resentment. For some people, it creates apathy. And we throw our hands up and say, well, what's the point of all this? Secret sins can ruin a church congregation. And we've got to be careful about that. Because the consequences of my actions could ripple out to everybody else and have drastic effects. We've got to be careful about that. So what are we supposed to do about all this? When times are good, when times are bad, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, with all of our soul, with all of our mind. We're supposed to love God and honor Him no matter what is going on in our lives. And as we've read multiple times, you're going to need endurance because that's not always easy. It's not always easy to keep our focus where it needs to be because we get bogged down, we get distracted by life. There's lots of things going on. Some's easy, some's hard. But no matter what's going on, we've got to put God first. When times are good, especially when times are good, we need to be on guard. And be careful. We need to not take risks. We need to resist temptation. The Lord's brother James writes about this, and he says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. resist temptation. If we find ourselves starting to calculate an amount of risk to get away with something, we need to stop and back up because we're going too far. Don't take the risk when it comes to sin. Galatians chapter 6, I do want to turn and read this one. Galatians chapter 6, we need to realize that our sins can have consequences beyond just myself. Galatians chapter 6, starting in verse 1, "Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But each one must examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regard to himself alone, and not in regard to one to another. For each one will bear his own load. The one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him." And we could keep reading and reading and reading, but the point is, we need to understand that this is a journey, like we talked about this morning, that we are all on together. And if I fall down on the job, if I let my guard down and I start taking risks when it comes to sin, those can have some major repercussions on everyone around me. And so one of the things that we need to be able to do is work together. We need to bear one another's burdens because we're all on that same journey. You know where sin leads? Sin leads to separation from God. When it comes to sin, just like with Achan, death was involved there. For us, we have to be able to take our sin, our old person of sin, and we have to put that person to death. Just like with Achan. Because another way of looking at it in Ephesians chapter 2, when we were alive in sin, we were actually dead. But we put that person to death and we become alive through Jesus. There's lots of symbolism there between being dead and being alive. And we need to understand that this pattern that we see in Achan, the problem with Achan is, it's the problem with me. And it can be the problem with you. And this is something that we need to be cautious of and be careful of, because we have a job to do. We're to honor God and love Him no matter what. We're to bear one another's burdens no matter what, because we're all on the same journey. We're all headed towards the promised land, and we have a responsibility towards one another. I hope that this lesson has been helpful to you this morning, and I hope that you're able to take away something from this and make it a part of your lives too, because something that we need to see is this pattern, this repeating pattern of sin that we see again and again and again, doesn't just go away. This repeating pattern of sin is something that can affect each and every one of our lives today, right now even. And we've got to be careful about that. Have you been affected by this pattern of sin? I hope you haven't, but if you have, I want you to know that we are here to help you bear your burdens. We're here to work through it with you, to bring you back along the path, that journey towards the promised land. We can help you by helping you put on Christ in baptism. We can help you by bringing you back to the Lord, by confessing and helping you work through your sins, whatever you might need. I hope that you come forward, please, while we stand and while we sing.
I am resolved no longer to linger, charmed by the world's deceit.